Welcome to Parents' Perspective. 15-year-old Mike and his pal Carl dragged themselves up from the basement, sweaty, red-faced, and exhausted. Every muscle seemed to pulse with his own special ache. "I don't know," Mike began, pulling out the juice from the refrigerator. "Maybe these are the wrong kinds of weights." "Well," Carl reminded him, panting, "they are the kind in the magazine. The guy using them looked like it worked for him." Mike was thoughtful for a minute, rubbing his sore shoulder. "Guess we just have to put in more time at this stuff. It's only been 2 weeks, and just an hour so far today." "I know," Carl was considering more options. "We could add on a bunch of push-ups just like they do in the Marines." "Bring that stuff downstairs," he motioned to the juice containers, "and let's get back to work." From a parent's perspective, how can we help our kids have realistic body images? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Today's guest is an expert at body image issues with adolescents. Dr. Darlene Atkins is a clinical psychologist who is director of the Donald Delaney Eating Disorders Clinic at the Children's National Medical Center. She has been working with adolescents for the past 20 years. She has a small private practice and is also a consultant to local high schools and colleges. Dr. Atkins has two stepchildren in their early 20s. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Dr. Atkins.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
What kinds of issues connected with their appearance are you seeing with kids today?
Well, I think with boys as well as girls, there's the striving for perfection. I think it's not new, but it's still not gone away.
Perfection in what sense?
Well, I think, unfortunately, an overemphasis on looks rather than skills or competencies, although those are important too. I guess probably more accurately to say perfection across the board. I think kids unfortunately feel the pressure to be great, you know, in terms of how they appear and also their academics. And I think that there are just more pressures on kids in all areas.
Why do you think that is?
Well, it's a complex issue, but I guess the fast pace of our society and, you know, the high achieving parents obviously set certain, you know, role models and standards for themselves and for their children. And at least in a lot of metropolitan areas, the drive to get into the right schools and, you know, begins in nursery school. So I think there are just more challenges for kids in terms of growing up, what I would say, way too quickly. And, you know, unfortunately for kids too, I think a lot of it is appearance-based, and there's a certain role to the media in that as well.
Maybe that's something that is around that wasn't around 20 years ago or 30 years ago or more, because
right.
A lot of people were still performance-based and still had high expectations of their kids, but I guess more people are more aware of this kind of mindset because the media can display it in more areas.
Yes, I think you're right. I mean, we're bombarded with media images more so that today than 5 years ago, than 10 years ago, and, you know, on the TV and the videos and I think and magazines, certainly for girls, the emphasis is much more, you know, on looks and appearance and being pretty. And that starts very, very early. I mean, these aren't pressures that start at adolescence. You know, these are very young children. I have a 6-year-old goddaughter, and I don't know if any of you have shopped for clothes lately for little girls, but they are about as skimpy and sexy looking as some of the clothes for 14-year-olds. I mean, they're those little tops that come nowhere near meeting the jeans, and the jeans are, you know, the hip-hugger, low-low jeans, and even the shoes, if you've shopped for shoes for girls, just as an aside, are platform. You know, and you think of kids, I mean, even just in terms of the Achilles, you know, tendon, you know, shortening, I mean, they look like little shrunken teenagers in dress, and Britney Spears and those kinds of people are the role models. So I think girls are really pressed to look beautiful and perfect, and a lot of the times that's defined as thin.
Isn't that ironic when you think of the rise of Ms. Magazine and all these other alternatives for women, that the body image alternatives haven't grown at all?
No, I think what's happened is you're granted more alternatives, certainly these days as a woman, on top of still being perfect mm-hmm. in appearance. Those pressures mm-hmm. are all still there. Plus, in addition, you get the opportunity to become an attorney and a parent and still, you know, be a size four. So I think the pressures are no less. I think, yes, we have more opportunities, but the pressures haven't lessened in any of the other areas to accommodate that. So I think that the pressures are still pretty similar, although the opportunities are greater.
Since both boys and girls seem to be intimidated by whatever they think they should look like, what kind of mindset should parents have?
Parents obviously are living in the same culture, and the messages are infiltrating their minds as well. So it's hard to remove oneself and get a perspective on all of this. But I think certainly emphasizing to children what their bodies can do, run and jump and just sports that they enjoy and other capabilities that they have other than just how they look. And I think that's truer for boys, little kids, you know, 2, 3, 4, 5. If you tape conversations and some researchers spend their time doing these things, you hear a lot more comments from adults toward girls about how they look, the pretty dress mm-hmm. and the adorable ribbon in the hair and everything about looks. And boys, it does tend to be more what they can do. You know, you're so strong, or you run so fast, or you built that so well, or so those kinds of things are, I mean, things have certainly changed a lot, but in some ways not much at all.
when you deal with young girls or boys and their families with various kinds of problems related to body image, do you see influence from the parents, the modeling that the parents are doing? I don't mean professional modeling.
Right,
I mean
right.
the example they're setting for their children. How much of an influence does that have?
Well, I think that's huge. And another thing parents can do is, even if they themselves are preoccupied, let's say, with their own weight, dissatisfied possibly with their body image, discuss it with your spouse, discuss it with your best friends. Do not discuss that with your children. So, you know, ideally, we'd like to say, you know, the parents should have a healthy body image themselves. What we know realistically is many people do not, but it's, you know, I think very damaging if children, you know, are hearing the parent say, oh, I look disgusting in this outfit, I have got to start dieting, or if they observe that the parent serves dinner but does not eat the dinner, or does mm-hmm. not eat meals. Mm-hmm. So I think the best thing a parent can do is, you know, at least in front of the child, honestly, fake it and, you know, present a healthier body image, even then maybe deep down you feel. And maybe through friends or your spouse, you can talk out some of those conflicts that you might have within yourself. But they're not things to be talked about in front of children. And even just simple things, you know, not commenting on someone walking by who's chubby, or on the television set, you know, or on videos or movies, you know, not critiquing. And many times we fall into this, but being aware and kind of tuning into the messages that you're sending to your children about how people's worth is judged. So really trying to censor a bit what comments you make about people's outward appearance, their flaws, or going on and on and on about someone who's particularly beautiful. They didn't do anything other than get born to achieve that, you know, perfect height or probably weight. I mean, so much of it is set point. So it's not a, you know, an accomplishment. It's just great luck, you know, good genes. But I think that children have to understand that, you know, those people don't necessarily deserve more in this world. So that, you know, I think parents have to be careful about the messages and the critiquing they're doing of other people and then of their own eating habits in the home.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion on kids and body image.
Two excellent books written by hosts Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, are available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We are talking with Dr. Darlene Atkins about kids and body image.
Are there certain ages or stages when kids are particularly vulnerable to being obsessed with body image?
Well, I guess the first one that would come to mind would be around puberty, because there is, you know, such change going on in the body. And at least for girls, a lot of the research shows that girls who mature early, and it doesn't even have to be early as defined by a doctor. It could just be early in the sense that they got their period at 12, but their friends didn't get it till 14. So 12 doesn't sound that early. It's just compared to your right. own particular friends, you know, possibly you're early, and let alone the girls who are having their periods at 9. So the research has shown that girls that do mature early are at a higher risk for dieting and possibly then eating disorders, because a lot of them, the pediatrician I work with at Children's in Washington describes puppy fat as that little fat or tissue that, you know, girls seem to pick up right on that doorstep of starting their periods. And some helpful things that the parent can do and even the schools can do are to educate kids so that they aren't sort of blindsided by the changes at puberty, so that they know, you know, these are some natural changes, and that sometimes you pick up a little weight and then, you know, have a spurt in your height. So kids can know, you know, these are some expectable changes and these are normal, and won't be so shocked by them or frightened by them. So puberty is certainly one. But I think the whole adolescent period where kids are just convinced that people are noticing their every move, their every inflection. We all know that people are too busy to be so focused and are more self-focused, particularly if they're adolescents. But each teenager is pretty convinced that people are just scrutinizing them, and they certainly are scrutinizing themselves. And part of that is just developmental and is normal that they're more looking in the mirror, and that whole phase of life, I think, is a particularly self-conscious phase. But even young children, as I said, I think even young kids are, if you ask a lot of fourth and fifth graders, large percentages of them say, and I just want to make a distinction here, that they are on a diet. And what we know from that is they've learned that is the thing to say. I mean, that is the expected thing to say. If you followed them, thank goodness, throughout their day, they probably have ice cream at lunch and potato chips, you know, after school. But they aspire to be, or they think that they should be, dieting, which just tells us that they're watching a lot of television and they're taking in the cultural messages. So I think there's vulnerability certainly, you know, really through all of the childhood years. And then that particular spike, I guess, would be at puberty.
In terms of body image, are there differences between what the boys aspire to and what the girls confront?
Yeah, there really are. The boys, typically anyway, we've seen some exceptions, but the boys are much more focused on muscle definition. They are not so worried if, you know, and they're usually not so fixated on weighing themselves on the scale or what clothing size even that they wear. Boys don't mind being an XL as long as that means you have, you know, broadening shoulders and, you know, you're a big guy. So that's acceptable. I think for them, it's much more the muscle definition. And they've done studies on, certainly they've done them on Barbie dolls, and we can talk about that. But to focus on boys, they've done them on the sort of G.I. Joe figures, measuring the dolls themselves over the years, over, you know, 20, 30 years, their size of their biceps, the circumference, I guess one would say, around their chest, and shown that these dolls and action figures have gotten more and more, you know, buff, and these bulging, unrealistically, you know, bulging muscles. So if a kid is growing up playing with these sorts of action figures, then, you know, it's not hard to imagine that they would think this is what a really cool guy looks like or should look like. Again, it puts a greater distance between the sort of ideal self and the real self that most people can achieve, which, of course, is damaging to one's self-esteem. And probably the boys that you talked about earlier in the show and read the story about had grown up with those kinds of action figures and magazine pictures of men that are, you know, broad-shouldered, tiny waist, spend a good proportion of their free time in the gym.
How would you compare what you've said about the boys with what the girls are dealing with?
Well, with girls, it isn't so much looking muscular. There was a phase, I think through the decades, you know, there was the sort of twiggy, look like the wind could blow you over as the ideal. And then, well, if we go back, there was the more Marilyn Monroe voluptuous, you know, models of beauty. Then, you know, we kind of moved into the twiggy era where, as I said, you could be blown over by wind. And then there was a period where women seemed more comfortable with athletics and working out, and aerobics, you know, got so hot, and, you know, step classes, and there still is some of that, but at least for the adolescents that I work with, they're the girls, they're very concerned that they not work out so much that they get too muscular looking. They associate that with masculinity. So some of them feel like they kind of hold back. I've had some girls that they do crew, but with great ambivalence, for instance. They feel really fearful that their upper body is going to be too big, too overdeveloped. Obviously, for girls, you know, what most trainers will tell you is they'd have to do a whole lot, you know, to get that kind of muscle, you know, bulk that men get, but that's their fear. But for girls, they're much more interested in appearing small, you know, tiny. And if you think of the clothing fashions, there may be, for some of us, a tiny window of time during our lives as women that we would look good in the clothing that's out on the market these days, the spandexy fabrics and the belly showing, you know, very revealing clothing. There's really, for most of us, either a tiny window or no window of time to look good in those clothes. And yet the girls all wear them. If you see the adolescent girls or even very, you know, pre-adolescent wearing these clothes, personal opinion, majority of them do not look good in those clothes. Those are clothes, and, you know, I think, again, it's sort of driven by the market, you know, sort of tells us this is what women are wearing and this is what looks good. And then women either wear them, whether or not they look, you know, flattering, or they try to starve themselves to look, you know, be able to purchase those clothes. So girls are much more fixated on what clothing size they wear. They often trade clothes with their friends. And if their friends wear a zero, who invented that? I don't know. But there is such a size called zero or two or four. Then girls often end up feeling badly about themselves if that's not their body shape. So girls are much more fixed on weight and clothing size and looking small. Although as they get into the later teen years, they would like to also be busty. And that's hard to achieve if you're not eating and you're underweight. Then you have kind of a prepubertal physique.
This is very interesting because we're sort of seeing a disconnect between the way adolescents or pre-adolescents in some cases think they should look and the rest of the country, which is going into larger and larger sizes. And I have heard that clothing manufacturers have changed the sizes, so they've ended up having the sizes be smaller names even though they're larger sizes and so on. And so what does this portend for these children who are then coming into a society that's very different?
Well, yeah, I think some of the dangers maybe we're thinking about in the background as we're talking are anorexia or bulimia, because I've mentioned starving yourself. But obviously the most prevalent eating disorder in this country is obesity. And so I think, again, these are very complex issues. But for children growing up, it's obviously we want kids to accept their genetic destiny, their set point for height, and which, you know, we can't do. We can stunt our growth. If girls do go through anorexia early in adolescence, they can end up being not as tall as they were aimed to be. But we can't do too much about it in terms of being taller because we'd like to. And there's a set point also for weight, a range of about which, you know, our body is going to sort of gravitate to and be comfortable in. And we can fight it most of our lives, as many people do. But some people, the set point is not the cultural ideal, and they may be 5, 10, 15 pounds above the kind of, you know, magazine ideal look. So obviously we want those children and adolescents to feel comfortable with themselves. The going toward compulsive overeating and obesity is a problem, obviously, that needs to be addressed. So I guess what I'm trying to say is there are going to be children and adolescents who are heavy. That is their set point. They are not overeating. That is their true set point. And trying to help them feel comfortable with that. And then there is a huge problem in this country with overeating, which is another sort of facet. But, you know, people, I think probably in the fast-paced world that we're in, you know, grabbing things on the run or eating out of all kinds of other reasons, not just they're hungrier than the next person, but they eat when they're bored. You know, a lot of kids, you can see this. They're eating when they're bored, when they're angry, when they're nervous. It's sort of a self-soothing goes on.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion on kids and body image.
For an audio cassette copy of any Parent's Perspective show, send a check or money order for $5 with your name, address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 520015.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We're talking with Dr. Darlene Atkins about kids and the image of their bodies.
Kids have access to money,
exactly,
which they spend on food. And in my family, I have a niece 10 years old who's going to be part of a wedding this weekend. And she bought, my sister-in-law bought her a lovely dress to wear. And the bride did not want her dressed as a bridesmaid. She's 10, so she wanted her dressed appropriately. So they bought her a dress. And about a month ago, they tried the dress on, and the dress is too small. It's not just too small because she got taller. She gained enough weight that they can't zip it. So they had to go shopping again. And meantime, my sister-in-law is going, how'd she do this? I'm feeding her healthful foods, you know, and all this. And they brought home three dresses, two of which are young girls' dresses, and one is a women's petite because it was hard to fit her. She had to find out how this child gained this weight under her nose. And it turned out she's been taking her own money to school, and there's a candy machine at school. And so she buys candy at lunchtime, mm-hmm, just the child that really shouldn't be getting into that stuff.
Right.
If she could buy an apple from a machine, then that would be the choice she would have, but she doesn't have that choice. So I think that is another thing that comes up in junior high schools, middle schools, high schools. They do have machines where kids can get what they shouldn't
absolutely
be having.
Yeah. And I think the example you gave, it was important that they teased out, you know, what is going on. Because obviously when you said the age 10, I'm thinking that sort of on the doorstep of, you know, that, mm-hmm, pre-pubertal, you know, maybe starting her periods in a year or so, and she may pick up a little puppy fat, as the pediatrician, mm-hmm, would call it. But it sounds like it wasn't just a natural developmental phenomenon. It was the child eating, you know, lots of candy at school out of the machines, which is important for the parent, obviously, to know about.
Mm-hmm. As parents, what can we do to help this whole problem with our kids' body image distortions that they have?
Well, I think, you know, again, being very careful to avoid shame. I think that's the worst thing. The child in the wedding, as you just mentioned, had been shamed, you know, and, oh, you've grown out of your dress. And, I mean, to me, that just sounds like the scenario of all these kids that I've been working with the last couple of weeks, where it's prom season, mm-hmm, and they buy these dresses, you know, then, you know, they starve and starve and starve up till the prom because they live in fear that it may not fit exactly the way they want it to. So I think we have to be careful about shame. And with that 10-year-old, you know, emphasizing to her, you know, two things. Your body is changing, so it's hard to buy clothing, you know, a month or two ahead for you. And also, oh, gee, we discovered you're having the candy out of the machines, and that probably, you know, needs to stop. So I think the just healthy education around varieties of foods and not, you know, eating too many of one kind of food, rather than there being strict good foods or strict bad foods, like potato chips are bad. I guess, you know, you could talk to different nutritionists with different attitudes about it, but most of them that I talk to feel that, you know, anything in moderation is fine. And then if you limit a kid and say you can't have any chips, you know, any ice cream, that's fine if you know, had a padlock and you kept them in your house, but they will then crave those things. It's the forbidden fruit. So they will then seek them and overeat them when they are out of your watch. So, you know, portioning it out in a little colorful bowl and having that be their little special bowl, and that they would learn that it's not that it's a bad food, but it's a family. This is communal food. One person, you know, even if the family could afford for each one to have the jumbo bag, it's not a good example to set for them. So I think, you know, just teaching good, healthy portion control in terms of moderation, different, you know, varieties of, you've had too many of these kinds of foods today and not enough of these kinds of foods. And so now, you know, after dinner, what do you want to choose from, you know, from the other group? That sort of just, I think, healthy guidance is a good start. And then, as we said, the modeling and the parents also eating in front of the children.
Now, what about, that's good for younger kids, but when the kids get to be adolescents, and particularly boys, how can we help them with their body image?
You know, it's hard with boys. I mean, it's really hard. For instance, if they don't grow tall at the same rate as their friends, and, you know, that's part of body image too. I mean, we shouldn't probably just emphasize weight, but that's a hard one. I mean, other than, you know, hoping that they have some peers, maybe some female friends who see their wit or intellect, you know, or athletic, you know, there are athletics where they could certainly excel without being tall. So I think that trying to highlight some, hopefully you hope that there are people that recognize the things that they have to offer, and then a lot of reassurance, and obviously, you know, meeting with a pediatrician to just to make sure they're just on a different timetable and there's no other problem going on. But I think just a lot of loving reassurance. The height is particularly hard for boys. Many girls don't, they worry about it in as it ties to weight. When you talk to girls, they're afraid that if they're short, then they can't let themselves eat because then they'll grow out, as they say. They want to be tall so they'll look more slender. They don't necessarily want to tower, you know, over the other girls. Boys want to tower over the other boys and at least be as tall, and it helps in certain sports, you know, basketball or certain things.
You have to read them books about Napoleon and things like that.
Right,
there
exactly.
are so many people, when you stop and think as an adult, how many grown men you know who are not tall men, but men of accomplishment, men with wonderful self-esteem and abilities. Somehow we have to let our kids know they're out there.
Exactly.
And you might be one of those people.
Right.
You might not be a six-footer.
Right.
But you may be somebody who really does wonderful things in the world.
That's interesting. Looking for those examples is helpful.
I didn't realize till very recently that outfits like the United States Navy has a height requirement. You cannot be over a certain height to be in the Navy.
God.
I guess maybe to be on submarines or whatever you have to be on. And there are all kinds of things. I think about jockeys and all kinds of people where the height is not a significant thing. And I guess, as you know, parents of boys need to be sure to sort of gear into that if it looks like height is an issue.
Dr. Atkins, could you share with us some resources about kids' body image that some of our listeners might consult to go a little beyond our show?
There's a wonderful booklet that I guess I can plug, and it's called the GURZ, G-U-R-Z-E, 2003, Eating Disorders Resource Catalog. I can give you their 800 number if you'd like. It's 1-800-756-7533. This is a free catalog. When I go to schools, for instance, I can call them and say, send me 200 catalogs, and they arrive at my office door. So it's a free catalog, and they have sections in there geared, even though it's called Eating Disorders Catalog, there are sections just on body image, self-esteem. There are sections geared toward parents helping to prevent eating disorders in their children, sections for educators, for struggling teens themselves, and some videos. It's primarily books, but there are videos, and then on the back of the cover are all kinds of websites that are also helpful.
Speaking of helpful, our special thanks to Dr. Darlene Atkins for joining us today to help us explore some of the problems children have today with body image. Thanks so much for being with us.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you for having me.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our book, Washington, D.C. with Kids. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address, and mention show 187. Tell us, if you can, what station you're listening to. Since we're airing all over the world, it's always fun to know what station you're tuning into. Our books, Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, are both available at all major bookstores and on the web.
To learn more about Parents' Perspective and our books, Parents as Mentors and Washington, D.C. with Kids, visit our website, http://i.am/parentsperspective. That's http://i.am/parentsperspective. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Our sound engineer is Damon Fisher. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.